This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
All right, Power people, we're in the second hour of Power Talk on this Wednesday, the 3rd of April. And where are we? We are in Menland, Pretoria, as we observe the goings-on at the Young Professional Seminar hosted by the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. And just for all of you who are joining us for the first time this morning, why are we here? Well, the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, also under the auspices of the Ministry, has a program and a project that's been running since 2007, actually, which is to either train young professionals who will then be absorbed in the built industry, or to bring them into the program at a later stage in their studies, and then hopefully give them the kind of mentorship, support, project management training that then makes them eligible to work in the specialized field of construction, property, and build. As we said when we spoke to the minister about half an hour ago, is that in terms of investments for infrastructure in South Africa, we're talking an almost cumulative figure of 1 trillion rands. It's definitely more than 103 billion rands that's being allocated towards build projects in the country. And that in itself accounts for about 8.7% of South Africa's GDP, and a substantial amount of jobs that help to then unlock and stimulate the economy. However, and this is the caveat, is that in recent years, certainly from about 2020 onwards, we've seen a decline of 0.3%. You could say COVID was an issue, yeah, but really capacity is the biggest issue, is that the skills that are needed to build once there's a deployment of capital are really, really lacking. If we talk about a program that began in 2007, we've only seen 154 professionals registered, right? 154 professionals who would be part of overseeing this 1 trillion in investment. So that's certainly not enough across three provinces. And what does the ministry or the department build? We heard they build everything from police stations to schools to prisons, right? And we know there's a huge, huge demand for this social infrastructure in the country. So right now, let's find out a little bit more about the program as we speak to two young professionals who are in the stream. We're joined by Inam Kula, and we're also joined by Oliver Brown. Both are, shall I say, professional architects or soon-to-be architects?
Professional here.
Yeah, I'm a professional.
And soon-to-be candidate.
To be very soon, May.
Hey, so, yeah. Congratulations, good luck.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know much about architecture, but I do remember that when I was at university, that was like a 7 to 8 year degree. So it's not small change.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's actually 6 years. So Oliver and I actually went to university together. So we've really come a long way. So yeah, it's basically, you go through an undergraduate, and then after the undergraduate, you have to go through an internship. After the internship, you come back for honors and masters.
And you have to do honors and masters?
In order to be an architect, officially an architect, or to register as a professional architect, you have to have a master's degree.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
So that's more than those 7 years that I've counted. That's
yeah,
a
when you
long
add it,
time.
If you add it all together, it becomes pretty much 7 years, yeah.
Sure.
And then you still got to do 2 years after the master's
for
registration, and then write your exam. So I'm writing my exam, and I'm just finished hers. So she's got hers qualification. Yeah.
That's why she's like, I'm a professional.
Yeah, she's got a smoother voice.
Because she's done. Because she's done that exam.
Yeah, like I'm.
And you're like, I'm fingers
also
crossed.
Also like a baby. Like, yeah, chatting.
Okay, there's a lot that goes into it. So tell us a little bit about the field of architecture, you know.
Wow. The field of architecture.
Because we just think you're just drawing houses.
Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, the field of architecture, I like to say, you know, how doctors save lives, we shape lives. So we shape lives through the built environment, and that includes like all buildings and spaces around buildings, you know. And obviously, given the history of our country, we also know what the capabilities of architecture can be. You know, architecture has the power to hurt, but also has the power to heal, you know. So I think that we, in a post-colonial setting, we need to think about how we can build society through architecture and good spatial practices.
So architecture has the power to hurt or to heal.
Yes.
So matchbox houses in a township, diminish black people, architecture.
Yeah.
Create integrated spaces, make it easier for people to live and go to work, healing.
Yes.
And so you are part of that process.
Correct, yeah. 100%.
And most importantly, I think sometimes a lot of architects forget about public space. I think it's almost a fundamental aspect of public of architecture. And if you don't develop and think about public space, you end up with matchboxes.
Okay.
You end up with like a non-place. It's not like a community. So.
Okay, so there's a lot that's going on in architecture at the moment, Oliver. I know you're still writing your exams, but I'm sure you've thought about these issues. So nowadays it's about climate change. You need to build smart. You need to build buildings that are self-sufficient. We also say, you know, cities like Johannesburg and Pretoria are spread out, which means that people are driving kilometers and kilometers, hours to get to work. We need to shorten that commute. You then help to find those solutions. Tell us what you see.
So I'm actually originally from Cape Town, and I've worked in Joburg for 2 years in a practice here. The biggest issue I think with Joburg Pretoria is the suburban sprawl. So you have places that have like are quite dense, like Pretoria and Joburg, which is I think quite good for the city. Maybe not too big. You don't want to go too far because you pass the human scale, you know. We should go back to the very like local 3 to 4 story kind of walk up. It makes the city work better. But then in between those things are these extremities of like intense density. You have these suburban sprawls, which are just like you said, you drive for kilometers. So if you design a city like that, you're going to be wasting 2 hours of your life. That's if you have a car. If you don't, I mean, in Cape Town, I'm very familiar with it. Like, you know, you obviously have the working class, black working class that are working far from the city. So I think everyone needs to come to the party, not only architects, also urban designers. They also play a big part.
Okay, so I think you can see my reasoning for asking these questions is that when you now come out of a young professionals program, you need to help a minister and a department think about these things when they say, okay, what are we going to prioritize as infrastructure investments for the country?
Sure, and I think, so obviously the program started in 2007, but in 2014, the Department of Public Works adopted a pipeline strategy, which was to look at transformation within the built environment. I mean, if we take architecture, for example, it's still a white male-dominated field. I think in 2018, there was around 68 registered black women architects in the country.
68?
In the entire, 68. That was around.
And how many architects are there in general? Just a broad brush figure.
I think in the 5,000.
Yeah, 5,000 around.
So 68 out of 5,000 or so.
Something
okay.
Like that.
Okay.
So you can imagine. So I mean, I'd like to say that obviously, black women are the most marginalized of society. So we need the people who are the marginalized to be centered in conversations around how we make a country and how we make community. So we need black women to be in these conversations and to make society better.
And designing and these solutions.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a very sobering figure. 68 out of perhaps 5,000 to 6,000. I don't even know what that is in percentage terms, but it's a little bit. Okay, and that explains why the minister said in our program we're also we've got a special emphasis on recruiting young women into the program.
Oh yeah, correct. Definitely. And you can see how obviously the legacy of apartheid still very much persists within the architectural professional status.
Okay, so Oliver, how do people get into the program? How was it for you?
For myself, I'd finished my undergraduate degree and I'd worked at a firm in Cape Town for 2 years to get my internship, and then I'd basically found out about the program in my honors year, so they'd funded my honors and masters through a bursary program. And then basically through that bursary you had to work for the department through this young professional program. And then so that's kind of how
So they recruited you at honors level, so you'd already got a degree and you were now entering the postgrad, and that's when you qualified for a bursary, and then they've sort of nurtured you since then.
Yes.
Okay, Inam, for you?
So for me, it was from undergraduate level. So it was undergraduate, and then I was taken through an internship program after undergraduate, which actually assisted me because there's a lot of gatekeeping. So someone like me might not have had an opportunity to get a proper internship if it wasn't for the department. So there's also those factors to consider. And then after that, I was taken into the postgraduate program and then finally into the young professionals program.
Okay, and that explains the numbers I'm seeing, which is this program, the department spends up to 700,000 rands on a single candidate. It's because they are funding your undergraduate yes. program. Yeah. They are then funding the internship. They are then funding the master's yes. that ultimately
Correct.
Gets you to be an architect.
Correct. And yeah, post the master's also to get to professional registration. So they're mentoring us through you know, the registration process up until we get registration, which is then I think something that we are discussing today.
Mm. You use the term in that were it not for the department, you don't know if you'd be getting this far, certainly in the industry and access, because there's a lot of gatekeeping. What does that mean?
Sure. I mean, I think without being too political, I think
You don't even have to mention names. Just tell us what it's like. So can you just wake up and say, I'm going to be an architect, I'm going to study, I'm going to do what I need to do, then I'm going to find a job at a firm. It doesn't work like that.
So even at architecture school, I think it's difficult for black students to get through the system. Also, it's a very subjective course. So a lecturer can decide that you've passed or you failed, and you can't dispute that in any way or sense. So that happens within architecture school, and then even access to opportunities to certain practices really depend on the color of your skin. So when there's programs such as these ones, it actually helps individuals like myself get access to opportunities.
Mm. Okay, so I would say, Oliver,
yes,
in a facetious manner, well, you're a young white male. You shouldn't be having these problems. Is that true or false?
No, it's funny you say that. So I have my own non-identity crisis. So my mom's colored, my dad's white. So I could maybe term myself as mixed race.
Okay.
I do think the fact that my mom was colored did help me, I guess, get the bursary program. I think as a white male,
you wouldn't have qualified.
I don't even think, I probably wouldn't have qualified, yeah. So that is also, yeah.
Kiss your mom.
I do.
She gave you good genes. Though.
I do.
She gave you good genes.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a lot of that transformation within
yes.
The sector as well that needs to happen
yeah.
to have
yeah.
more black and brown people
Definitely.
Coming into the system.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay, so let me ask you the question this way then. I don't think you've got an identity crisis. You're just very clear who you are. But your colored heritage,
yeah.
how has that influenced or informed your architectural lens?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. Massively. Not that I disregard my white heritage, although he's originally Irish, and Ireland apparently were the first country to be colonized, so that has its own history. But with my mother, she's Muslim, and my thesis was focused on the you could say the heritage site, or one of the first heritage sites of Islamic sites in in South Africa,
yeah.
which forms part of the cradle of Islam in the Cape.
Yeah.
And so I basically developed this almost like museum type of thing along the river. So that was a big part of my thesis. So it had a big influence, I would say.
Okay, so I think it's appropriate that we're having this conversation even at Ramadan right now.
Oh, because, yes.
Because I lived in Cape Town for a while,
yeah.
and I do know that in as much as it looks like a very cosmopolitan city,
yeah.
it has its own pockets of, we're going to call it cliques, because it's
yeah.
not really segregation. Nobody says you can't live here or do this.
Yeah.
But people keep to themselves in Cape
yes.
Town in a really strange way. And, you know, and when that happens, you do see a lot of heritage preservation or erasure.
Mm.
And the whole story of District 6, forced removals.
Yeah.
And you're not just removing people from an area because of their race as colored. You're erasing everything that is their rich culture and
yeah.
the links to the center, the Cape of Good Hope. And architecture does that. It
yeah.
either divides or it builds.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, there's so much I can talk about that. I don't even know where to start. Even with like the fact that people I feel like only really know about District 6. There's a lot of other sites, like Weinberg. It goes all the way down to the Cape Peninsula.
Even with the story of District 6. So, for instance, my grandmother was born in District 6. So, it's a story, like, people don't know that there were actually black Africans that lived in District 6 who then got moved to Kwalanga and Nyanga and Sort, you know. So there's also erasure of that, and that's something that we have a responsibility to also bring out.
Yeah. So when you decimate a community and you break down buildings, you're breaking down this history, because you're not just breaking down homes, you're breaking down mosques and you're breaking down shops as much as you're breaking down people's homes.
Sure.
And so transformation in architecture is to make sure that we don't just walk around the Super Bowl without a sense of what's going on.
Sure. And you're also stripping people away of the identity, because then what do they become of that? Home is something very central to us as a people. So then if you're taking someone's home away, then you're essentially taking their being.
Okay, so let's talk about the program. And the minister said an interesting thing is that the young professionals we train, we ultimately want them placed in the Department of Public Works. So that, and he said, even for a time, before they go out and flourish in the private sector, we really want to draw from that knowledge in how we shape and implement policy and project manage. So technically, how does it work?
Well, currently, I think the only pipeline is the Young Professionals Program, so that registration period. But at the moment, there's no obligation from the department once you register to keep you inside.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because obviously the department is investing a lot of money, like you said, over 700,000
per student. Yeah.
It's actually an investment that they're making, right? And I think even today, what we probably actually have to get to quite soon is we're going to be on a little moderation panel, and there's a lot of other things we're going to be talking about, but I'm going to be concluding with exit strategies, which I think the department needs to address. And there are three kind of exit strategies we were looking at, which was opening up doors for long-term employment for young professionals, like within the actual structure of the public sector. And that can range even from municipality level. Mm. And then there's an incubation, so like sort of like a design program. So when there's when the public works is under resource, or they don't have their lack of capacities, they can maybe take these smaller project design projects to young professionals that have just qualified to sort of help with the burden of those projects. And then even furthermore, I think which comes back full circle to a lot of things, is once a young professional is qualified, they might want to start their own practice.
Yeah.
And you can imagine how difficult that is, even especially as a black woman in the circumstance of today. So maybe looking at how you can link those two things with the department in helping develop those and transform those practices.
So it's the department can't just think about getting you the education and getting you some experience. They've got to think about who you become after all of this. And so for you, Inam, let's end with you, because you started from undergrad all the way through to the last exam and the registration, and you've been under the shadow of the wings of the department. When eventually you're ready to go out into the big challenging world of gatekeepers, do you think you're sufficiently equipped to do so?
Somewhat. I do think that we do need assistance and further guidance from the department, as Ollie's saying. So perhaps we have those incubation programs, because I mean, I don't come from a background where there's any business people in my family, so where would I even start with that? So I think that we do need to have some resources or support from the department post registration.
Okay, so what's the future you want to build?
The future that I want to build for South Africa, it looks equitable. That's all I know.
Fairness. The future you want to build?
Yeah, in a similar sense. I think for me, I'm quite obsessed about public space. So for me, if we can just improve public space and public buildings, because I think public infrastructure is like in a dire state. Right. And I think that if that's something we can fix, then the country as a whole will run better. Like, I know that for sure.
I am so enthused when I look at the two of you. I feel like it's going to be okay.
Yeah, we hope
Thank
so.
You very much.
Can you just sort out the traffic congestion, please?
Yo.
That one gets me every day. Without fail, public transport.
That's all we need. Good public transport infrastructure. Then we don't have traffic.
Or we walk and then we get exercise as well at the same time. So kill
Honey, I walk. I got my gym membership. It's the trudging through the traffic every day. I can't. I can never, ever, ever make sense of it any day.
Yeah, I agree.
Inam Gula and Oliver Brown, both of them members of the or participants in the Young Professional Program under the auspices of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. Inam, she started from the get-go, undergrad all the way through. Oliver joined at honors level, postgrad level, but both of them sponsored by the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure to help in the redesign of policy, the implementation of policy, and the reimagination of South Africa.
For sure.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.